it's finally happened, the moment you're training for your entire life. The hosts of Fortified Nice stand there on their pedestal, accepting the award for the world's second best miniature wargaming podcast. You pick up your space rifle, you line up your shot, nothing can go wrong. You've trained for this for years, for decades. Nothing can stop you. Oh wait, no, a drone spotted you, you can't shoot anymore. That would be bad. It's Mars Code Aurora.
Fortified Nice.
This game was provided free of charge and scanned by JC Dent so we could play it online. Thank you so much to the producers and production crowd available there for providing us with this copy with no intention of giving a certain kind of review, just to review it. Hey gang, welcome to Fortified Nice. I'm Kassa, joined this time by JC Dent. How are you?
Hello, I'm in 2024.
Ooh, woohoo, welcome to that. Hope you all enjoyed the guessing episode. Let's see how correct we were, and also go check out those games you mentioned.
Also, make sure those games get released and are good. Thank you.
Yeah, how have you been otherwise? Anything new or exciting in Zunis today?
Well, you know, we are getting the usual climate change winter where you have snow one week and you have no snow the next week. Temperatures dipping below zero this week sometimes, so it's unusually cold, and then you remember that it would dip to minus 20 more often when you were a kid and it was colder and you were less surprised. So, like, you know, maybe that's just me getting old. Maybe it's the fact that I still freeze my arm off when I'm at the computer. Like, the right mouse arm is like always frozen, but I'm sure you can relate in Australia. Like,
get a compression arm strap. No, the fun thing about Australia and the world in general, as documented to me by the ABC, is I will never experience summer as mild as my parents have, and none of my potential children or friends' children will ever experience a summer as mild as I've had, which was a comforting thought to have, and I've really internalized that going forward.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess your winters will never be as extreme as the ones your parents had, maybe?
Yeah, well...
More extreme, actually. Well, stormy and less winter.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be less snow and more bullshit. And also...
How do you feel about sleet?
Yeah. Oh boy, we sure love sleet around these parts. I love having autumn all the time. It's all autumn, and the shitty part where you don't even have the colored leaves anymore.
Yeah, it's cold and miserable, and everywhere becomes England.
Yeah.
Speaking of cold and miserable, today we're playing Mars Code Aurora.
A game that was recommended to us by, well, Rachman Daltrey, the Mr. Forbidden Psalm himself.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, I can see it.
It's actually produced by Studio 6201, which only has presence on Facebook, which I can't view due to my recent breakup with Facebook, and also boosted by Studio Tomahawk. And the damn rulebook itself, in its physical glory, was shipped to me by Northstar. So this is a long chain of people to get this game on the podcast and review it. Studio 6201, is either Spanish or maybe potentially French. Spanish, probably.
Oh, they look... Yeah, I'm not going to assume. I guess we can look it up. We can find out. No, they look French. All their websites are in French.
There's also Studio 6201 podcast about drinks, so I don't know what the connection there is.
No, they look to be... Yeah, I'm going to assume they're French. Going forward.
Yeah.
Well,
this baguette of a setting. It's a skirmish miniature war game, and it's technically a generic rule set, but it does have its own setting and setting materials. This is when we hit our first bump in the road, because the setting is, for lack of a better word, bad.
It's generic. It's fine. It's threadbare. It exists if you feel like reading however many pages there were.
Of the setting, let me check.
Very engaging. Basically the Earth is doomed. We've all buggered off to Mars in 12 giant spaceships called Arks. these arcs immediately fragmented along ideological lines. And when we got there, there are Gribblies on Mars trying to eat us. So
yeah, well, 11 pages of fluff. Casa undersells it because he didn't get to read the whole fluff, only a few excerpts I sent him. Because, like, you know, when I get a physical book in Lithuania, it doesn't do much for a guy in Australia. And I didn't feel like providing a full scanner service. So in this book, you have Europa, which is the local Aleph equivalent, the AI that quickly takes to run. Okay, it takes to running the humanity. Then there's also Santa Hanna Industries, which becomes the super mega corporation that rules everything. But there is also another corporation run by another family that's also big, kind of. And look, I'm not Casa, so I can be more of an asshole about this. But the fluff isn't great. It has all the edginess of hard men doing hard choices, but it's kind of gleeful about it. Every three paragraphs you get, and the people found out about this bad evil thing and they wanted to change a thing, and then the evil bad man shot them all dead. And this like happens every three paragraphs, and it's kind of gets annoying, and it's just not great writing, not well translated either. But stuff gets mentioned before it gets explained. Stuff has very silly names, like what is Empire in this?
Whatever you believe it to be, baby.
Well, Empire is the one big remaining PMC on Mars. They're mercenaries. They're the mercenary corporation. They're literally just called Empire. No Empire of anything or anything. They're just called Empire. And in them, they have a secretive group, Protex, which are fanatical believers in science, technically, who shoot people who aren't into science and stuff. The previously mentioned Santa Hanna becomes synonymous with science defection to the point where it's sometimes called the capital S science in the fluff. The book also has aliens who land on Mars to introduce themselves to humans, and humans shoot them in confusion. Three more ships land, and nothing happens in the fluff. You can't play as these aliens. There are other aliens who are bubbling out of the mines on Mars. There are some implications that they might be hiding something from humanity or something, but for all intents and purposes, they're just the gribbly bug aliens that exist to be shot or dramatically overrun small outposts and eat them. So... if you had a hard time getting into, say, Infinity's setting, you're going to find it impossible to have fun here. It's we mentioned when we played the Black Powder Red Earth, we say that it's refreshingly cynical. And this one is not cynical, it's gleeful in the kind of crap sack world it builds. And ooh, everything's bad, and wait, that thing, that's also bad. And it's not only that, but also that lack of grace where you get like science capital S thrown about, or Empire the PMC, or the super secret European super soldier program to develop genetic freaks that will allow EU overtake US as the world cop, being called the Super Soldier Project. That's their official name. This is the Project Wotan of World War II, where the Brits guessed what it was from the name. But it's like, come on, man. It's not even trying. And it takes like 1.5 page to talk about how this project came about and where it went, and its only purpose is to show where the quote-unquote science faction in the game gets its clone troopers from.
It makes some wild choices in what it decides to spend its attention on.
It doesn't really offer new ideas or anything cyberpunk, I guess, in the setting, because, like, you know, you look at it and you see its closest big equivalent to be Infinity. No, it doesn't do anything with anything. So I can't recommend the game based on the fluff merits at all.
You know, like, as I've sort of said a bunch of times, like, the fluff doesn't bother me as much, because as long as the game is fun, I'll play whatever, and the fluff is like a cherry on top. Like, as long as the fluff isn't actively hostile and hateful, like, I can kind of skew through it. And, like, because that's obviously the one that I have, but, you know, everyone agrees. But it is nice when, like, it engages you and wants you to play. And I'm on the record often as saying, like, Infinity's got too many hard men making hard choices. The best bit is the joke about the combined army inventing God and then God leaving, because that's absolutely hilarious. Take us with you.
No,
I've got to step out for a moment.
You know, after I send it and find out that you guys are just a bunch of assholes. Goodbye.
Stuffing my pockets full of baguettes as I just prepare to uplift myself into the forever zone.
Well, Infinity is Spanish, so it's stuffing its pockets with churros or something.
Ooh, I would do that. I would totally go someone, but it's like, yes, churros.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, putting the steaming pile of fluff aside, where it can, you know, look up longingly at Eclipse face fluff. It's a miniature skirmish game. Where it has a interesting take on dice, in that it doesn't matter which dice you use, because it's, you know, it's 50-50 odds on any dice toss, like, that you get a success. It's like, you know, if you're playing with six-sided dice, it's successes are 4 pluses. If you're playing with d20s, successes are 11 plus. So, you know, whatever dice you have, you use it, and what you do with that is get dice pools.
Yeah, that's basically all of it. It's such a weird mechanic. It's weird. There's also, like, only one opposed dice pool in the entire game.
Yeah. It's never an opposed roll. There's no armor save. You just roll against a stat and stuff happens. Except for suppressive fire, where you roll off your shooting ability versus the enemy's willpower, and which is the only opposed roll in the game. Other than that, you build your army, then you build your activation decks by taking one card for each soldier that you have, and then you draw from that same deck to find out who's going to activate next. You can freely choose from your unactivated troopers. And they get to do two orders. Well, they get a free move order and an other order. So, you know, it's like not exactly two free orders. It's not as Infinity, where you can just,
you don't get two actions every turn. You get an order every turn, and one of the orders you can do is move option, and every one of those is free. But lots of the orders are just, like, redundant. Like, if you move into someone, you get a free attack. So you can move up and then go into Overwatch. You can go up, move up and then walk into, like, you can punch someone. Or, like, all the sort of expected actions are there, including a scenario special action, which is fun, and I quite appreciate they've included it so that you have some versatility in everything you do.
Yes.
It just highlights how much the game is a single resolution system with no granularity or degrees of success. Doesn't matter how many times, how much you succeed by, as long as you succeed by ideally 6. If you succeed by 6, you kill the other guy straight away, except for one special rule.
Yeah, because all the soldiers, troopers, whatever else in the game has 6 health points. And when you shoot a guy, any successes you roll are straight up damage. So if you roll 5 successes, that's 5 damage.
Everyone has 6 HP.
Yeah, and when you shoot a guy, you take your guy's aggression stat, add to the gun's power stat, and if you're within 20 centimeters, the gun's burst stat. So no, burst doesn't multiply the attack or anything. It just adds more dice, which is
just get more bullets. Sure.
Which is not how you imagine burst to work. So, like, if your gun is, like, power 11 and then burst 3 just adds 3 dice to those 11 dice. It's kind of weird, but whatever. And then you subtract the enemy's endurance stat from that.
Which gets you to 0 or less than 0, so you do nothing.
Oh, yeah. And then you roll your dice and see if you hit. And this is a problem. This system has an issue immediately in which we accidentally ran into with our first game we tried to play where Casa built. We weren't even going for the thing. I knew Casa was going to go for a science faction, which just gets a 2 dice bonus to every shoot action always and forever, which is an insane bonus to have in this game. And I took equality. And my trash garbage troopers and some of my non-trash garbage troopers just wouldn't be wounding his guys.
You needed to bring the Markolite laser spotting guys and start adding bonus dice to the next person who shoots at them. And even then, you're only rolling a dice.
Yeah.
2 dice. And then cover is per object is minus 1 dice. I love how simple cover is. Cover is either you have it or you don't, and each thing in the way removes the dice. Everything's measured from you sort of do the model eye view, which I hate, but it works. Because my back doesn't bend that way, and I don't really play games that are eye level, so.
Yeah.
The first thing I sort of after this, our second game, I realized that the way suppressive fire works, the only system in the game that is opposed, is you roll your shooting value, and they roll their willpower value, and then you compare the results. It's the only system where you compare results in any kind. And then if you get double, they run away, a move in action. They get to do a free move away from you, or.
If you score more than them, but not more than twice than them, they lose their reactive order, which is what you have one. To get. Yeah. If they have one, because you have to give reactive orders, just like you do orders, and a guy might have like 2 reactive orders placed on him.
Yeah.
But
and if someone's got a bunch of reactive orders, sure, suppressive fire will script those away. But they can use one of those reactive orders just to shoot you. Because you don't decide what the reactive order is until they spend it. And sure, it's only one reactive order per enemy activation, so they're moving and they're whatever. But you've got to engage to the suppression, and there's nothing to stop them being like, I'll shoot you while you're moving. Because I don't like opposed rolls, and I think I can kill you. And you've been like, oh well, I guess I'll just get shot. Yeah, good. Go away, die. And like immediately my thought there was like, if you did it more like say Revised Carnival second edition, where they roll their defensive stat and then you subtract that from your attacking dice, that could give an actual level of interactivity, and the game stresses it. It's always active. There's no moment where you have a 40-minute break to go mow the lawn, unlike some games where you only roll like desperation dice. But you don't get to do anything during the opponent's turn apart from like, I haven't played that point, so you can just do your thing. I'm molested. There's nothing I can't stop you.
Yeah, because when you're not when you're moving your guys, you can't shoot with them, so you have to choose like whether you want to move twice and maybe put them in a better position for like shooting next time, or whether you want to move once and then go on the reactive order, which can
move once and I'll pop smoke. And that it's not an infinite volume like Infinity, but it's a 5-centimeter volume. So that becomes fun geometry. You're trying to be like, well, my guy is 6 centimeters tall, so technically he can see over it. But also, how far can he see over it? If your guys are like shorter than that, so I'm going to model for advantage. But if they were shorter, then.
Yeah, and this is another way we broke our first playtesting, because we'll talk about more about this in army building. But for level 1 guys, they. All stuff comes in 3 ranks, I guess, in the game. You can spend 1 point out of your, say, 25 to give 3 guys an upgrade, 3 level 1 guys an upgrade. I gave 3 guys smoke grenades because I thought they would be, you know, useful. They are. What happens is you can build a wall of guys with smoke grenades, and they will advance and pop a smoke field around themselves, and that whole pie plate, that whole circle becomes unshootable through. So It's not often when we both manage to break the game during army building without even trying.
Yeah, in like weirdly circular ways. Of like, it's the defensive thing is front of mind for everything you do as well, because if your opponent brings the defensive 14 guy and you haven't got any comfort and triple or AP guns, and you're just like, oh, I guess I'll just die.
Yeah, defense over 10 becomes a problem immediately, because a lot of level 1 guys are going to be rolling 11, 12 dice under like normal circumstances if there's no cover, but they're not within 20 inches. And then those guys are like, cool, I'm immune. Immediately, I become a panther tank and you have a most intelligent and you can't do anything.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right.
Amusingly, close combat works differently because you're adding your attack and weapon power and they're subtracting their attack aggression from it. Yeah, their aggression, sorry. It's aggression and weapon power. So, like, big tanks generally don't have good aggression, but also,
you have to get there.
You have to get there. And there's lots of ways they can have to just, like, there's no stickiness to combat, it seems. You can just walk away from it.
Yeah, and also some of those tanks are armed with 90-centimeter guns in a game where the board is 19 centimeters by 9. Not 19.
Yeah, zero, but
90
zero,
centi- yeah. 90 centimeters by 90, and the gun is 90 range.
Yeah.
And he can evaporate your guys while they go through because the gun is like power 11 or power 14.
Yeah. And he can shoot both his guns.
Yeah, and he also has two guns. I'll complain more about guns in the army building section, but yeah, that's not great.
The actual mechanics of that game. The blowwork is super fast, it's super quick. There's a cool, interesting option you have for your commanders who have a rank as well. Infantry and everyone just comes in ranks of one, rank one, rank two, or rank three. And your commanders can give orders to people of their rank or lower, never higher, depending on what their rank is. So rank one guy can give one order, rank three can give three orders, and they're immediate actions that happen immediately, which is how you get like multiple reactive attacks on someone.
Yes.
And it's kind of interesting, except it's a 15-centimeter range, which behooves your boss to be as close to guys as possible. So what I found is you bring the cheapest possible guy, you put a rank 3 thing on him, and you also give him the ability where he can't be shot unless they're within 40 centimeters. Because that's what it sounds like, and makes him way more survivable. Because if you can't shoot me, you can't hurt me, you can't stop me giving my murder machines free shots.
Yes.
And it's like, what's the counterplay to that? Or even just like give him a smoke grenade. Because issuing orders isn't an action. So he just pops smoke. Walk up, pop smoke. You can't shoot me. Can't shoot
me. At this point, we don't know when in the officer's turn can he give orders, whether he has to dole them out all at the same point. So as I was saying to Kasa, I think it can be interpreted that once you say I'm going to activate an officer, you can do one order before he moves, one after he moves, and then move again and then give another order. Maybe there's something in the wording of what activates is versus orders given, but no. But that's the way you dole out reactive orders as candy to guys around them. Sure, you can't stack multiple orders given out by officers to just anyone, but I mean, you can't stack multiple orders on the same guy if you're giving them out with an officer, but that's it. Another thing about the game is that it features the drones that nobody used in the Infinity and Free or whatever thing, where they're supposed to not let you shoot guys or use the war crime weapons. You know, the peacekeeper rule that was supposed to make O12 interesting when it came out, and then it did nothing. So this game features these drones. They activate on the three Joker cards you have in the deck, and the turn actually ends when you draw the third Joker card. And
like
the drones.
I like the drones. The drones are neat. The drones make something kind of cool.
Drones are kind of a fun thing because it's almost like a third faction in the game. It's just that they don't feel hugely impactful. They They have a 10 centimeter radius or something, or maybe smaller.
It's radius for sure.
A 10 centimeter zone in which you can't shoot. And once you draw a Joker, the last player who activated moves that drone 10 centimeters towards the last miniature that fired. So it's kind of likely that it's going to move towards your miniature. But there are two drones on the table, so you don't always have to like move the closest one.
And you can move either drone or any drone, really, when you play the Joker card. And like, it's interesting because it adds that level of like insecurity. Like, do I actively push to shoot you and then maybe draw the Joker and have to like make my shooting platform just FUBAR, or try and get a hacker over into the drone's zone of control and try to hack it, which is not reliable. You roll three dice and you need to succeed three times to move the drone, which is, you know, 50-50. Yeah. It happens all the time.
Both of the times Kasa tried to hack a drone in this game, he failed and got a single HP shot in for his troubles. Hacking is also the only place drones is the only place hacking appears in this game, so that's cool.
It just brought up in the scenario action in the book. There's a fantastic example of play where it's like, hey, there's this other order you can give where it's just sort of like, do a thing in the game world, like open doors or close doors or turn on the generators for the gravity.
Universal action, you know.
Yeah, universal action, sorry. And it's fine. Like, you just roll whatever number you need of dice and then successes mean something happens. And it's this really interesting setup, but it strikes me as something where, like, the GM that you're playing with will help you adjudicate this. Because, like, in no way am I going to let Dent try to open the doors and flank my guys and let anything less than 27 successes, because I'm here to win the game, and that's the way my brain is wired. Which
yeah,
is
that's
really cool.
That's the thing we discussed before this game, and, like, players shouldn't have to have the duty of adjudicating what is a just game or just gameplay stuff in a game, because they have a vested interest in winning.
It's also, there's like a difficulty tokens that get passed back and forth. So if you take like the very hard token and roll a very hard roll, the opponent gets it for their next roll, kind of thing. And it's interesting because it sort of behooves you to, like, if I make this simple thing really tough, then I can penalize your attempt to do something really hard. But it's also like, I don't know, it's just wishy-washy enough that it's not enough there, not enough grain, and the objective missions, the missions and special rules don't bring it up at all. Really.
Yeah. These things don't get put into game organically. Now, if we hearkened back to a good game, Pull Pally, and the way its dynamic objectives works, where you get a choice of stats, maybe if you went to push an objective button and then you had to choose the difficulty token that you will be then giving to the enemy player, maybe then it would make more sense, and if it was like hardwired into the system. But currently, it's not.
I completely understand the other point of it, where like in Infinity, having your or any sort of game, trying to push the button to score a point and failing repeatedly can be infuriating.
Oh, and God,
bad feeling. Like, aha, I'm whipped 19, and there's a 20. Try it again. There's another 20. How many 20s in a row can I roll? You'll be surprised.
Yeah.
All bad.
Hello, I am a pan-o paramedic. I have never healed a person in my life. I exist here to deliver the mercy blow on the suffering troopers. So yeah. I know this feeling fully well. So yeah, if the system was more baked into the game, it would be better. But no. Just like with hacking. If you sometimes find Infinity hacking underwhelming, boy, you ain't seen nothing yet. Have we missed any other important systems, I guess?
So the missions are interesting. There's like there's a half dozen, you can D6 them. There's a bunch of different... They also come with separate deployment, and there's also tactical objectives, and you also have your own secret objective. So there's a bunch of variety in how missions play. It's like 6x6x6. So it's also, you know, there's not just
simulation. Yeah. I will say this.
You also have asymmetrical objectives, which is fantastic fun.
Yes. It can get a little goofy so when you have the ambush deployment where one player deploys in a lump sum and then the other player deploys their force in like two corners, and then the player that deployed all at once gets the mission to go to the other player's deployment zone and plant a flag. It's fun that it has that asymmetry baked in, because it always feels a little silly how in Infinity, well, it's a tournament game, fine. But how all of these special forces always converge to do the same button pushing thing at the same time in an area basically devoid of civilians. This game doesn't have civilians either, so. But yeah, I like the bit of asymmetry, and I like how you get to choose your tactical objectives. Although the big downside of your secret objective is that one of them is killing the enemy's most valuable infantryman. And like Asa said to me, isn't that what you're trying to do anyways? Which is, yes, true.
Generally, you're sending your most expensive guy forward because he has the biggest gun, or he's the toughest, or he's the best at just everything. It's like, oh, okay. He's going to be, like, unless... Yeah, like, there's a bunch of stuff. Like, it has the Counter-Strike style, like, run a civilian across the board, which I quite like. I love that sort of shit. Like,
yeah.
That's neat. They're neat missions. Like...
Yeah, and it also has tokens, secondary objective things on the map that you can capture, which can be somewhat sad, like the shield marker that improves your defenses on a small radius around it. They can be a lot more useful when you touch ACM and it provides your forces blanket protection from the drone pacification rule, or it can be absolutely bonkers, where a comm beacon allows you to roll three dice and call in your successes in ranks of
reinforcements.
Yeah. So if you roll three successes, which I did in our first game, I just brought in my most expensive possible heavy infantry on the table. It's like something that maybe shouldn't be randomly assigned onto the table. And possible to use infinitely for every turn that you have. Why wouldn't I bring the biggest infantry that the enemy regular trooper can't even shoot?
Yeah, it's just even 2 points is an extra, like, really tough dude sometimes. Like, here's another, like, 100-centimeter range sniper rifle. Just go, blah, 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 blah. Like, well, and it's just, it's free models. That's, once again, pushing the action economy out one way than the other. There's also, like, emplacements. You can just, like, deploy HMGs, which is quite fun. I quite like that a lot.
It doesn't increase your activation count, because the cards you put into the deck, one for each trooper, they never get changed during the game, as far as I understand. So even if you started with 20 dudes and you keep losing dudes, you never get fewer cards. But so I guess that helps players playing trash armies to stay in the game so much, and maybe doesn't penalize the players who brought only elites too much either, because, like, hey, if you had three dudes, lost one, and now you have one card, good luck drawing that idiot. So I don't know any more rule stuff.
Are kind of fun, like, it's nothing really.
I guess most of the other stuff is in army building, because, like, half of the game's craziness is in there. So in this game, you usually play with like 25 points of dudes, and on the regular run of things, you pay 1 point per unit rank, with rank one being your lowest of the grunts, and your rank three being power armor dudes. With vehicles, you pay their rank plus two. You play their rank plus 3 points, because vehicles are usually much tougher and better armed. Sometimes your troopers have a choice of weapon they can buy, which is always 1 point per. And you can also buy upgrades, and it depends on rank. So 1 point buys you upgrades for free rank 1 dudes, or 2 rank 2 dudes, or 1 rank 3 dude. And those upgrades could be anything, but they're most likely to be furtive, which is an awfully translated rule, meaning that you can't be shot off outside of 40 centimeters, which is insanely useful on anything, and especially on guys that can move, can shoot further than 40 centimeters.
Yeah, so I walk backwards and shoot you. I walk backwards and shoot you. I walk around the corner and shoot you. Like...
Furtive is one of those choices where there are no downsides. Another good contender is Carapace, which is like, hey, did you want armor saves? Because now you have armor save. You roll a dice for every injury you get, and on a success, it's removed. So like it's 50-50 odds to cancel each injury. The only saving grace is that you can't buy these upgrades for quote-unquote armored vehicles, which is another awful thing about this game. So, the rules are technically meant to be generic, and like they say what armored infantry, what infantry means. But armored vehicles, and this is a term they specifically use, covers everything from motorbikes to bipedal robots.
Tyranid warriors,
To like Tyranid Carnifexes and stuff like. Then you need a mechanic to repair them, so they're not very much like Carnifexes and stuff. And their rules aren't that well explained. For example, the fact that armored vehicles can fire both of the guns they're equipped with is nestled among special rules. There's really no one section where it explains how there's no other... Look, this should have been placed much earlier in maybe the place where they explain what the unit stats mean, maybe in like... to outline how different the quote-unquote armored vehicles are when compared to the other units. But it's also the section where they explain stats and they talk about officer commission like being a stat marked with a letter C, and there's no such thing in the game. You can make an officer out of basically any infantryman you want. So just paying points for that. And another thing about this game is, like, you know, you have to buy officers and you pay each point per rank, and you have to have at least one officer and not more than three, though I don't know why you'd buy three. And then outside officers, there are specialists. Each faction has a somewhat different access to them, and specialists are like hackers, medics, mechanics, and I don't think we ever wanted to use them, maybe...
Yes, there's infiltrators, medics, sappers, mechanics, hackers. Sappers are useless. They deploy like a 40 millimeter token, which becomes difficult terrain. In front of them, which isn't like super helpful unless you're being charged for everything. But like, why you can't afford enough sappers to make this worthwhile? Bring smoke grenades.
Yeah, it's the same 1 point, and if you're paying it for on a smaller dude, like you could deploy it on the smaller dude. And it's like, what if the enemy isn't playing a melee focused army, the sapper ability doesn't do anything.
Yeah, and an infiltrator gets you deploy anywhere on the board outside of the enemy's deployment zones, outside of their immediate line of sight. Which, sure, that's fine. That's cool. But like, who deploys that in first? And if you have an infiltrator, do you deploy over infiltrators first? I guess you do, because how deployment seems to work is all of your guys and all of my guys. But, yes. Like, it's a point per specialist upgrade, or it's 1 point for three grenades for rank one guys, or it's 1 point for two rank two upgrades, or it's 1 point for one rank three upgrade. Upgrades that ranks is basically the rank of the trooper. So it's like, why wouldn't I just make all my guys better at shooting, because none of the missions need objectives? And like, science, all their leaders become hackers.
That's, for free. That's how we first learned how the hackers work, because they're all free.
Yeah.
And I also had a sapper in my first team, and that never came up. Like, as far as situational things go, this is extremely situational. And there's an optional rule where you can make your officer or anyone who basically a hero. And like, it's an optional rule to use in bigger games. And what bonuses heroes get? Oh, most of the stuff is like once per game shit. And like, whenever I see once per game stuff, I'm like, I don't care. I don't want to use it. The only thing, the only one per game thing that ever felt exciting are the Hunter Killer missiles in Warhammer, and that's because I have insane fascination with vehicle-mounted ATGMs.
Also, you just use it straight away, right? Like, you have the thing that immediately you want to use it as soon as you can. Like, that's my move, hero points in every game. Like, roll the dice, hero point it. I just don't want to remember the shit. Or I'll never use it again. I appreciate that in a mini-agnostic game, you want to let people model and sculpt and bring their favorite dudes along to the game and not feel like they've got to go and buy a bunch of dudes or paint a bunch of guys or paint a whole armada of things to play this thing. And that's cool, that's fine, but the generality of it sort of helps it fall apart. Also, why is everything got a breath weapon rather than, like, say, a torrent weapon or, like, a flamethrower or a template? It's like, oh, you've got a flamethrower? Actually, it's called a breath weapon? That makes more sense in the world we're building. Like, in what way?
Oh, if we're going to talk about weird word choices and translations, man, these guys hired a translator that's a native Spanish or French speaker, but not English, because, boy, we have some choices. So, for example, climbing is a mechanic that you do when there are ladders and other things that meant for climbing. What do you do when you're approached with a surface that doesn't have a ladder? You do escalating.
Escalating time, baby. What does that mean? It means killing your Jeep.
Yeah. There's also several times that weird faction names are mentioned, like violence. There's no such faction as violence. There's brutality, but there's no faction called violence.
There's also the faction, this build your own best of list.
Yeah, it's the greed faction. You're playing mercenaries.
Don't just optimize your guys, though. It's not designed for that. Okay, I'm just bringing the best guys anyway.
Yeah, like, if you don't want me to do something in the game, you're the game designer. Maybe try design around that. Yeah, and another thing that doesn't really help is the extremely wonky unit names, unit type names. It's just Lion Clone Pugnator, Combat Clone Ferrum, Elite Clone Bellator, Domination Faction Unis, RCU Eternitas, RCU Prosperina, and you're like,
what does that even mean?
Like, what am I? Or the equality, which the equality faction, where the translator just went to sleep and didn't do anything. My basic guy
the fucking
is
Kung Fu Styles faction.
Yeah, the Kung Fu Style faction is all like Phoenix
monkey,
Adept,
ape, Tiger,
Tiger Monkey class, and whatever. But like in the equality, it's like Igualdad Soldado, and I'm like, the hell does that mean? Does that just mean equality soldier? Which maybe it sounds better if you're Spanish or in Spanish, but it doesn't sound that well reading it in the book. And all the names are kind of like that. Justicia Protector, Inocente Vengador. And you're like, I know enough English to try and maybe understand what that means, but doesn't work either way. Even if it was translated into English directly, it wouldn't be good. And then you have armored vehicles, quote unquote, named like Haas and stuff.
Yeah, but fundamentally the army building just sort of doesn't really grab me. You need to set up so many boundaries at the start of the game of like, all right, what kind of game do you want to play? What sort of list do you want to bring? And like, obviously it's conversations you have with most games, but like, if you're just like rocking up to your Friday Night Games thing and you just built your favorite faction of like, you know what, I want to run my fucking Zuyongs and they're all going to have missile launchers. So I think that this, let's just say, you know, the Unidad Vigilante works for me. Cool, they're all endurance 12, and all their guns 50 centimeter range that do 15 dice base. You haven't brought guys that can hurt armor 13? Oh, that's a shame. Anyway.
Good luck pushing the button. And when I talked about the fact that you can upgrade some units, let's say you go with the Hunger Faction, which is the Gribbly aliens that are bubbling out from the ground. If you go through their unit list, they have zero weapon choices. You're taking the guys as you're getting them, and you can only give those like furtive upgrades on them. You can't buy any of the weapon options. None of the quote unquote armored vehicle awful name have weapon options they can buy. And At most, you can sometimes buy someone a different ranged weapon, never a close combat weapon. And armored vehicles.
Oh, you can always swap out vehicles stuff for a close combat weapon.
Yeah, if you're insane, yes, you can.
You can also take away four of their jurists for 5 centimeters of movement. Like, but why?
Well, and also, for 10 centimeters. And also, if we're talking about faction special rules, so say science, right? They get assistive targeting optics, which is they add 2 additional dice during all of their rolls to resolve shooting. So, you know, always get 2 more dice on your most important roll of the game that you'll be using all the time. Or
and free upgrades for your leaders. All of your leaders get a 1-point upgrade for free to become a hacker, which is just useful. It's a nice thing to always have.
Also, you dingus, you ignore, apparently their hackers ignore the results of 1 or 0.
Oh, okay.
So if you buy science officers, they can sit at the drone and they hack it till they do it because they'll never get hurt. So yeah, okay. So science. 2 dice to every shooting, useful every better time, hackers. Every turn on everyone. Order. When you make a roll willpower check, you can choose to reroll the dice of your choice. And also, officers can issue orders on any range. So,
that was pretty good. The range on the sick.
Yes, but you have to buy officers, which costs points. And willpower rolls, you have to beg the enemy player to start shooting at you, to start using suppressive fire. Meanwhile, the science player is rocking up with their 2 additional dice of shooting and going like, why would I suppress you? I can just shoot you dead.
It's very
not great.
Silly game.
Also, another thing I'm going to complain about is that quote-unquote armored vehicles can often come with 2 weapons and can shoot both of them, and they're more often than not the same weapon. You can just shoot it twice, and this is like, why? What's the fun in that? Like,
first guy that also has this 2 identical guns, and they have pistolero by default, like a quality hazard as well.
Yeah, I think I have a quality has a guy who has 2 flamethrowers and pistolero, and I'm like,
yeah.
Fuck you. It's
cool.
And like for at the same time, Equality also has an armored vehicle, Haas. No, not Haas, Martillo. And it's an indirect mortar. What's the range? 40 centimeters, which is a bit more than your regular assault rifle. And doesn't have any burst. So it's P6 A5. So it gives you at most 11 dice. For double mortars that you have to shoot to get close to shoot, and it's an armored vehicle, so it's an E13 that doesn't do anything E13, and the indirect rule for some reason isn't baked into mortars. It has to be written out separately.
Hell of a way to spend 4 of your 25 points. I think we could go through page by page the army list, but I think we should move on to our next section. And then really learn how to chew down on excuses about miniatures, which is this whole game's oeuvre. Like, the whole point of this game is to buy miniatures. To get news and use whatever.
Yeah, they do a lot. They've done an admirable job of producing pictures with miniatures, and they mention the producers under every picture. And when you open up the Brutality faction, which is all named by monkeys, but in fluff they're just gangs that exist in the arcs, you see the Rackham Space Gorillas and you're like, yeah, I guess so. We guessed as much.
Rackham's is so easy to buy. Just, you know, off the shelf, right?
Yeah, flying off the shelf. Good thing that's not a company that managed to go bankrupt twice. But choose whatever faction you like, whatever reason, and buy whichever miniatures you like. It's hard to recommend stuff when it's hard to recommend the game.
I mean, it's just generic sci-fi. Generic sci-fi with like lots of versatility and variety to it. You don't have to feel beholden to any sort of scale. They encourage you to get 15mm, 16mm. Like, you could just use anything you want as long as it's single model based and you can differentiate them easily. It's freeform. It's completely up to you. they mention a lot of 3D printer crowds on their website as well, like Titanforge and such. Like, basically go back to another sci-fi episode we've done and listen to those miniatures, because like they're all still there, they're all still going. Like, you've got everyone. Like, it's whatever you want. It's, you know, it's just freedom.
Horrible, horrible freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom,
I mean, we, anything you want, but good.
We playtested this using the Infinity 3D Miniatures project on Tabletop Simulator, and I discovered that some weird guy had converted his Toha into hair metal.
Absolute legend. What a fucking hero. That's so cool. Like, the only cool thing Toha ever done.
Yeah, some of those guys, he sculpted guitars on some of them, and the one guy that, the one girl or guy or whatever the artichoke gender is that has the nano screen, has the nano screen represented as a drum set.
Hmm.
Their band is called Vetri Toha because he painted the name onto the one of the drums. So,
that's so good.
I've seen some wild conversions of Infinity Miniatures in that project, but this one's the wildest. That guy who just made his what's the nonce from Bakunin?
Mervyn Morris.
Yeah, that made the faction, that faction sexier. That guy is a pedestrian when compared to the "I'm going to make a glam rock band of Toha" guy.
So fucking cool, though. It's so fucking cool. It's a shame you brought up in this game, because nothing this game can do can possibly compete with that. It's just like... Anyway, speaking of things that are extremely cool, let's start with your first positive about this game.
Well, I like that they stick to the dice pool mechanic, and it never becomes the target number modifier or anything. It's always like more dice, less die. Maybe the fact that they stuck to a one type of die helped them remove the dreadful impulse to also make modifiers to dice numbers.
Yeah. Much like the bracket out in the bracket apostrophe alley games, has been like, it's always a 4+, you always want to roll a 4+, you just see dice as modified. But this is sort of like, that's whatever dice you want, doesn't matter. You want to roll a big clicky clacks, want to roll a small clicky clacks, as long as you know what half of it is and it's an even number, just toss coins, flip coins, that'd be fun too.
Well, I think Force and Force actually had dice modifiers, but Pull Pally, Pull Pally, that's good.
Mine would be the drones are fucking awesome. I love the idea of like there's a zone of exclusion where you can't shoot your guns. Just like there's something that's going to affect your game, you have a modicum of control over it, but for the most part, it's just going to screw you.
Yeah, I like it. I like the way it adds a neutral faction to the game. Would be nice if it also had civilians. I guess I'm advocating for neutral factions that interact with the players and do their own thing and aren't beholden to being doing the most vac outcome at every point in basically even computer RTS games. That is a nice bit to have. I wish they were a bit more impactful, but I don't know, maybe I'm
more
in
drones,
a different
head, yeah.
In a different headspace. My
first negative would be that like it's just so hard to skew into a unbeatable army, not for like any lack of trying. And if you do go hardcore on the guys who roll off some dice and your opponent does the same thing, it's going to be the worst boring slap fight in the world, because you both be removing so many dice from each other's attacks that like, aha, I'm rolling 15 dice and your endurance 13, so I roll 2 dice against you. So I do a wound and have 5 more to go. Because all of your models have 6 wounds and all of your models have 1 dice against them, and it's just such a boring fuck. Either you roll a billion dice against something, or you roll a dice against something, and there's not enough of a happy medium.
Yeah, I'm gonna drag my own bullshit into this, and it's one of those things that could be alleviated if you had army building rules that meant a damn. Like, just balancing it with points never worked in any game I know under the sun, I guess. Even Infinity does more than just points, because Infinity you have the SVC limits, and you also have limits of how many you can take of a single unit, and then you have the combat group size limits, and like all good games limit your ability to build an army of your favorite bullshit dreams, and all the bad games put out by G-dubs and non-G-dubs are like, hey, do whatever. And it turns out it's a horrible faceless mess where players have no incentive not to gravitate to the best possible optimal choice at any point.
Yeah, the first list I took was nothing but rank 3 guys and a rank 3 officer. And, like, it wasn't a hard skew. It's just like, well, what if a bunch of power armor dudes came here to kick in a bunch of miners because, you know, strike breakers playing the JC Dent role? It just, I didn't mean to do it. I didn't intend to bring an army you couldn't hurt.
Yeah.
To your tank. Like,
I mean, I knew immediately that castle was going to take science because it's a shooty. It's an army that gets a bonus to shooting, and we all know that castle would never be a corn cultist. So,
every game you bring is a shooty game. That's all I'm going to do is play the game you offer me. If you bring a big game that's all about cool combat, like, say, Moonstone, I will bring cool combat and also a cannon, because cannons are clearly melee.
It's Harry, called
the fucking cannonball. That's all you got to do.
It's called the loading grape shot. So, yeah, if I'm going to complain about something, well, they say that the fluff doesn't matter, but the fluff is really bad. It doesn't endear me to the game at all. And even if, and maybe they should have, like, leaned in more into that fluff. They provide a few examples of which armies you could run if you wanted to do different universes, like maybe Gang Overrun City, like I don't know if it was Necromunda RoboCop or Alien versus Predator or like, you know, zombies. But nah, man. Maybe it should have leaned more into the weirdness. And of course, they're trying to make a generic rule set with, like, generic army build list. But if you're making an army list, you can probably also apply some thematically fitting army building rules to that. Look, last game we played was Age of Magic, which aimed to be a somewhat generic fantasy rule set, and it had armies, and those armies had their own building rules. Like, you couldn't take infinite zombies in the undead in the undead list, but they also had, like, army subfactions where you could say, like, go completely insane and make an army of entirely monsters. It had rules for putting in a steam tank without letting you take infinite steam tanks. Make the fluff you're trying to evoke be more present on the army list, and also have better fluff. I didn't enjoy it at all.
Yeah, that seems to be the totality of the problems of the game. What would your positive be?
I'm only remembering more complaints than I didn't say, but.
The optional rules for events are kind of neat. Like, you can, everyone get 3, draft them out basically, and then, you know, people can play them at any point. Like, make the game shorter, make the game longer, or make people move slower, radiation. Like, it's something simple, and it alters the game as well, make it a bit more interesting. And because it's last return, you'll generally remember it. Unlike, say, Batman thing of, like, don't forget, guys, something happened 4 turns ago, and you should be remembering it each time. Like, got shit to do.
I guess I'll say that the dice pool mechanic is maybe fine. You could probably fudge the numbers to make it less swingy and stuff, but they stick to the mechanic, and you are always either, like, you know, reducing the dice number or increasing the dice number and the number of dice you rolled, and it's fine. You don't have to rack your brain for it. And so when it comes to, like, shooting, you always know which line to run, and you just do it.
Yeah, like, it just, this works. Like, that's the main thing. So, like, obviously we come to the sticking point. The answer seemed obvious, but would you play this game if you had to buy the rulebook?
Because
it seems you have minis already.
No, I would not play this game. It holds zero charm for me, zero appeal. If I wanted to make cool Mars adventures, I could probably just take Infinity and like carve some parts off of it if I wanted to. It would be easier, faster, and make for a better game. We also had a few other rule sets you could use for that, so like Xeno's Rampant. But no. No.
We chatted, obviously not interested in it for me. We chatted about some house rules you could bring in to sort of change up the way dice pools work, but it's like, well, if I'm starting to fucking do this much work for the game, then what's the point of the game itself? Like, if I have to build the goddamn factory to make the Lego set for you, then I'm not fucking interested.
At this point, I mean, Rogue Planet. Use Rogue Planet, I guess. Rogue Planet has some of that feeling of rough and unfinishedness, like with how wildly different the special weapons are in Rogue Planet and stuff. But it has some neat ideas, and you look at those systems and you understand how well they fit together and how they accomplish things they want to achieve. And I'm constantly saying that someone's game should rip off, be inspired by Rogue Planet. And I wish Rogue Planet got edited to be like, you know, more what I like to see in it. But this game, nah, man. So I'm leveling the same question to you. Would you play?
Nah. Not even with your rulebook.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it wants too much from us, and it's not interested in being the kind of game we're into. Like, it's a fun fuck around game, but there's so many of those that do it so much better and offer you so much more space to play in the sandpit. Like, there's just enough caltrops in the sandpit to be annoying for me. And I don't like a game where you can accidentally skew this badly.
Yeah, that's... No. Mm-hmm. Like Kasa mentioned Cardin Valley. Cardin Valley prevents several things by also having army build limitations. And
It kind of felt like leans into it. Like, if you have Dracula punching a mook, Dracula doesn't want to be doing that. He's very good at it, but he's not getting the rewards he gets from beating up heroes. You know, like the Ezio knockoff is great at beating up Dracula sometimes. It also highs and lows, swings and roundabouts. This is a game of variability, and the simple action of placing the saves before the attack rolls, so you feel like you're affecting the dice pool. Like, my protection roll is actively reducing your ability to hurt me. Feels fantastic, as opposed to here, it's like, oh, I'm just tough.
I'm just a brick. You can't do anything to me.
You've got to bring the brand rule that helps you, dickhead.
I complained about this to Casa, but the whole buying special weapons for our army is just... It's some of the least exciting stuff I've ever felt, and it felt so bad, and especially like when one faction doesn't even get any optional weapons to buy. Like, even the, your Termagants, Hormagants, they get to choose some things to get their shit in Warhammer. But this reminds me, this inequality of in having options reminds me of one of the aspects I didn't like about... Warhammer Shadow War Armageddon, where, like, hey, your guardsmen can buy, like, them, like, plasma rifles and targeters, and if you're playing Necrons, you don't buy shit.
You get the gas you get.
Yeah, we couldn't be bothered to, like, come up with upgrades for Necrons, probably because we were afraid that if we mention a thing that doesn't have a model, you'll buy that thing from somewhere else. We can't even possibly imagine Necrons inventing a green dot scope. This is like how it feels in this game, and also like with vehicles basically never having any rules. Like, all right, I got this big tough dude. He is the biggest shit in my army. I can't absolutely do anything to personalize him outside of, like as I mentioned, doing the stupid thing of replacing their ranged weapon with a melee weapon, which isn't that impressive. I think it's a P7 or something.
Because I'm good at fighting. Otherwise. And,
the giant robot, not that great at fighting. And, or making them small but fast, which trades for endurance for additional 10 centimeters of movement, which also doesn't feel like the best.
Unless
of
you're
trades.
Hunger, then you don't get to do that.
Yes, because
you're a good bitch.
Because your armored vehicle is a giant gribbly thing. I don't think you can heal them with a medic. You probably still need a mechanic, which you can't buy. But accuracy, let's check me. Hunger's armored vehicles have the Titan special rule, which is immediately written out. Can never have the small but fast special rule.
The game does that so much of like, they have this special rule, and here's the special rule straight away, rather than saying like, these things can't do this. It's just, by the way, vehicles have the Pistolero rule. What does that mean? Look it up. Just tell me.
Yeah. Because vehicle shooting works exactly like the Pistolero rule, I think. And why don't you say it? Why don't you have a box outlining all the ways that vehicles are different from...
Or just say vehicles have Pistolero. It's all of them do that. So remember, I can always be like, oh, that's right. Vehicles also have this ability.
Or all add Pistolero to every, like, you know, vehicle profile.
Just, that's why just you have it. Special rules like that, because people will forget things unless they're looking at the machine and go, ah, yes, awesome, there it is there. Reminding me of this fun thing I have.
Okay, hungers don't have access to medic or mechanic, but they do have access to hacker somehow.
Ooh.
Help, the Thermagons have learned COBOL.
Unix, I know this. Just like banish. All right, man, that feels like a podcast. I don't want to keep talking about this game. It's too late to pretend to give a shit.
Yes.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for subscribing on Pocket Feeds or Spotify or wherever you listen to cool podcasts like these. Give us money on Patreon because Dent is knocking down the door. And yeah. What's next for us, good buddy? It better not be fucking Warhammer.
Fancy you should say that. It's probably Ninth Age.
No!
Tune in next time for an episode where Cassie is going to be screeching the whole time and I'll be the only one doing the talking. It's going to be like Love Honk, but screeching. Bye!
See ya.